Just the away win over Notts County this week. Simon says the thoughts he has for this team cannot be broadcast on the radio or any podcast. Simply unbelievable. Trevor Griffiths is loving this team's energy and tactical awareness. We're making top sides look bang average. James said it was exceptional from start to finish. Composed on the ball, unreal work rate off it. What a team we've been privileged to see this season. Danny says there's nothing better than watching this team every Saturday. First every ball, pressed very well, phenomenal. Brad Budden is hoping that the majority of this team is here next season. Chris Mason was pleased to see another disciplined performance and game plan executed perfectly in front of another superb away following. Adam Turner lists defending crosses and throw-ins, bad at set pieces, poor fitness and game management as hallmarks of bad crew sides. This season, we're up with the best at all of these. We're looking like a complete side. Sean Rogers is once again struggling to find negatives. The togetherness reminds him of crew sides from the 90s. Ian Perry thought Lee and Ryan set us up perfectly. This set of players is the best he's known for executing plans. Really think we can start thinking about the other P word now. Andy O'Neill credits the management for the work rate and solid structure. Key reasons we now go to tough places and win. Graham Miles thought crew were awesome for 25 minutes. Their sub made it hard to break them down, but Harvey's save at the end guaranteed the points. Tim Green thought it was close to perfect for 60 minutes, perhaps more nervy than it needed to be, but excellent result that was fully deserved. James said they could have had the ball all afternoon, and like Mansfield, their plan was to lump balls into the box. Gutted for Harvey, he deserved his clean sheet. Joe says simply, we're quite good, aren't we? Neil Hulse, tactically spot on, resolute, organised and passionate. Another great away day. Chris Blackledge, what a team. Chris Thompson, this is why we love the Alex. Dave Brereton says these three big away 3 points keep coming. Kev O'Connell said, we went 2-0 up and played it professional from there. Andy Griffiths asks, what if Powell, Williams, Offord and Long were all fit? Andy says it was control pressing and we cut out the passing lanes. He picks out Rio and Billington for dealing with their wide men, but adds Osterfield is some player too. Jonathan Ditt picks out the fullbacks too as fantastic, but labels it as Harvey's best game. We're delivering for the big away following. James Lindsay picks out Mickey for doing Mickey things the week he signed a new deal, and Big Nev for now being on 14 with more to come. Adam Brazendale wouldn't give any player below 8 out of 10 and wants the fans to take that energy into the next home game. H. Robinson thought every player was magnificent, but Rio Adebisi may be the best player in the world. Bex asks if it's time to start believing, and George wants to know if we should be looking to win this league. Hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Rower Men podcast. We're here to talk about the away win at Notts County. To go through that game, our panel today is Steve Davis. Hello, Steve.
Morning, Steve. Morning, everyone.
Alex Arani. Hello, Alex.
Morning, all.
And Mark Bertels. Hello, Mark.
Hello, everybody.
Right, let's get going with the game then. Steve, I thought the first 5 minutes we couldn't really get near them. They seemed to have the ball for the whole 5 minutes, and then Shiloh Tracy popped up on the wing and won us a corner.
Yeah, I think it was... They did have a lot of the ball the whole game, in fairness, but it was all in front of us. They were never getting in behind us. I never felt like we were under any sort of pressure. And then... Yeah, Shiloh, it's our first foray up the pitch, isn't it? Shiloh wins the corner. Short corner, which I'm not usually a fan of. Rio whips a great ball right into the danger area, and there's the main man. Couldn't really miss. Hasn't scored, well, four stop, but he hasn't scored for a while, but now he's back on the goal trail. So, a really good start.
Yeah, a bit of a goal drought that, wasn't it, Mark, for a centre-back of Mickey's calibre? Not a bad start, as Steve says, was it?
No, it wasn't. And I didn't realise that their keeper was making his debut yesterday. I don't know if you guys did. But it the cross in from Rio was superb. And it's one of those, having played in nets, it's a nightmare for goalkeepers because you have to anticipate that someone gets a touch and you also have to anticipate that someone doesn't. And thankfully, he did. And it's even despite the record that we've had away from home since January, it's still surreal that we go one up in these places. You know, you have to kind of pinch yourself, or I do, and think, is this really happening?
The cross makes the goal. He takes the defence and goalkeeper out of it. You're just hoping that someone has anticipated the cross to get on the end of it. And lo and behold, our striker, sorry, centre-half extraordinaire, is the one that anticipates it and gets the little flick on it. But it was a well-worked short corner. And like I said, I'm a bit old school when it comes to corners. You put a good cross in between the six-yard box and the penalty spot and get your big players trying to get their head on it. But if you can work a better angle, get a clearer sort of angle for the cross, it allows you to sort of have opportunities like that yesterday. And as soon as he got there, Mickey was never missing. It would have just been if he got not enough of a touch on it and sort of hit the goalkeeper. Goalkeepers can't save it from that range, it just hits them. But yeah, it was just a start. And I know you said, Stu, that they had a lot of the ball for the first 5 minutes. They did nothing with it, though, did they? I mean, they had a lot of possession yesterday, but you never once, it was all in front of us. When was the time that they sort of turned us around and you sort of chased towards our own goal? I mean, they had a bit of pressure towards the end of the first half, but you never really felt like they're going to make this possession count. So I was quite comfortable after 5 minutes, and I thought with a bit of quality on the break, they're here for the taking. But lo and behold, another set piece comes to fruition. And years gone by, we must have been one of the worst sides of both defending and attacking set pieces. I mean, this year, I'm not sure what our record is in terms of defending them, but the amount of goals we have scored from set pieces, I can't remember a season like it.
I have to jump in quickly because otherwise Tim will go mad. It was more tactical genius that we obviously knew that they would only take one out to cover the corner. I mean, we picked it up straight away. It's so naive, leaving a 2-on-1 from a corner. And it is tactical genius because they didn't do it again after. They always sent two out there. But even so, it was genius. And we obviously did know that they were going to only take the one out. But even so, you've still then got to execute the set play with the ball in and obviously the finish. So, again, I think that's probably a nod to Kenny, if that's still, I think, his speciality, isn't it? Set pieces. So, obviously, he's been busy sorting that. So, nod to him. And, yeah, brilliant start.
And I think to that point, I presume they only bought one out, mainly because we've been so threatening from set pieces anyway. So they're loath to sort of have two out of the box to have more space for our attackers to sort of get their heads on. So I presume that was something they looked at tactically. We've then sort of taken it on board and then gone one further with it.
Yeah, I think Tim, you're right, Mark. Tim was adamant. I think he made the point at least three times yesterday in text messages, but it could have been because it was his birthday and he was enjoying himself thoroughly. But yeah, absolutely superb stuff. And again, I'm going to say I agree with you, Mark. It's naive when you look at who those two players are, Rio and Kirk. Now, we know how good they are at delivering balls, but so should they be. They should be, you know, trying to stop that. Steve, I'm going to fast forward us on to about 20 minutes because Crew, all of a sudden, find themselves 2-0 up. And really, if we're looking at it from a Notts County perspective, you've got to be really disappointed with that goal, haven't you? You know, they've taken each other out and let us in.
Yeah, but I'm not here to talk about the Notts County point of view, let's be honest. It was quite evident early doors. Obviously, they were keeping the ball, but there was clearly a pressure point. Two things were fairly obvious to me yesterday. When Jones got the ball, he's obviously their danger man. We doubled up on him. Billo, Shiloh, and sometimes Connor Thomas. And then when the ball went into a certain part of the midfield, that was the time that we pressed. And that's obviously where we pinched the ball back from for the penalty. Was it Charlie that pinched the ball back? From memory, I can't remember. But yeah, it obviously high press, pinched the ball back, and Lane Everett in. Personally, I thought he should have shot, but yeah, he was composed to take it around the keeper. And it's a penalty all day long, isn't it? The only question is, should it have been a sending off? I've seen a Wickham goalkeeper get sent off yesterday.
It's not a sending off. Double jeopardy. You don't. How can you deny a clear goal scoring opportunity when you get a penalty as an output? You can argue, was there an attempt to play the ball? I think there was enough of an attempt to play the ball that the yellow card was the right decision. Don't get me wrong. I was chanting off, 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 wanting the red card, but it wasn't a red card.
I didn't even think it was a penalty at first. It looked to me like he touched the ball too heavily so that it was going to send him away from goal. And I thought that he'd flung himself to the floor. I was astonished when he pointed to the spot. But having seen on the telly, I think he did get caught.
In fairness, the ref gave himself plenty of thinking time. He didn't give it straight away, did he? And when he blew his whistle, I was hesitant whether he was going to book Ned for diving, in fairness. But I think it was a penalty.
I've seen it on the telly, and I'm pretty sure he did catch him.
The keeper's reaction gave it away. You saw as soon as he'd given the decision, he just threw his arms up in the air like, oh, for goodness sake. There wasn't like vociferous appeals or anything. The keeper knows he's made some contact with him. It looks bad because of how it's all gone, so that everything's just in the favour of the attacker to get the decision there. And yeah, it was given, and we were the beneficiaries.
Mark, I'm going to come to you. We've talked about two crew goals. Charlie Kirk didn't get the assist for either yesterday. If Never had took a shot and scored, he would have got the assist for that second one. I initially thought that pass was a little bit under hit, but it turned it was weighted perfectly. He probably didn't have so much involvement in Mickey's goal with that, you know, simple pass to Rio, but no assists. But I think it was nice to see what Charlie Kirk can bring to this team yesterday in his first start back at the club.
Yeah, I mean, my main take from someone that wasn't overly keen on him coming back, if I'm honest, to begin with, because I think I've made no secret of the fact he can be a bit of a moaner and a bit of an arm waver. And I thought, is he going to fit back in? But being away, he looks a level above again, doesn't he? You know, he looks too good for League Two. I think it was Rio we combined with in the first half on the far side where that amazing bit of footwork. It was just a joy to watch. And there was another couple of moments where, you know, he took it round defenders and left them looking ridiculous. And it's I'll completely backtrack on what I said initially. It's great to have him back, and he's going to be a real asset between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I share those sentiments as well, Mark. I was slightly sceptical when we brought him back. Are we making an emotional signing? Seeing what we've done before, is he going to fit in with the group? But actually, his attitude, he looks a different player. He was a bit pre-Madonna-ish in his first spell, which is maybe being slightly harsh. But he got straight in there. He's happy to roll up his sleeves and get right into his work. He's been a breath of fresh air. And he has got quality. Like, you look at his touch, his mannerisms. There's a few nice flicks. He feels like someone that can unlock some games for us where we've struggled. He did it last week when he came off the bench against Harrogate. We were turgid for 45 minutes. Him and Charlo came on at half-time, injected a bit of life into us. But Charlie Kirk, I think, could be more and more decisive as we go down the stretch when we're potentially playing against some sides struggling who are going to obviously try and frustrate us. That's where you're going to need his quality. You look at Shiloh, you look at Aaron Rowe, they're probably a bit more shift and run. Charlie Kirk's got a bit more guile about him, which I think we will need to unlock some defences that are just going to sit two banks of four in front of us towards the end of the season.
I agree with the bits of quality. I also think what I saw yesterday from him is he's arguing with the referee more of as a leader than I saw before. We don't obviously want to get in referees' faces and we don't condone that, but he is very much come back and taken on this mantle of, I'm going to tell the referee when I think he's wrong. There was one moment in this first half whilst we're talking about him where, even though I'm watching the game by myself and despite myself, I involuntarily found a little sly grin where he played that little back heel down the line for Rio on the overlap. I was like, this is what I remember. This is what I want to see. And then it almost seemed like it encouraged Connor Thomas to do the same. I don't know if you remember the move that I'm talking about, but Rio put a cross and it was slightly overhit, went out to the other side. And then Connor Thomas did a little flick for Shiloh on the other side, which ended in a crew corner. So all for that, all for Connor Thomas pulling out the tricks. And all for Charlie Kirk being back and making us play well.
I think unless anybody can shed any light on it, it must be that talking to the ref as a leader that got him a yellow card. Because
he kicked the ball away.
Oh, did he?
The referee had enough of him talking to him as well. Like, I liked it. The referee didn't.
Right, I missed what he did.
He flicked it away. Like, just it wasn't He didn't boot it anyway. He just moved it off its spot. And he,
Yeah, I think I'm with Stu. I think the ref just got fed up and thought, right, this isn't enough of an excuse for me to book you. But on the Charlie Kirk point, I agree with the with your points there, Stu, in regards to he's moaning almost as a leader. He's taking not the fight to the ref. That's not the right way of wording it, but he's making sure that he's looking after the rest of the side. He's 26 now, Charlie Kirk. I think you still think of him as a young kid breaking into the first team. He's not. He's 26 years old. He's probably got the best part of 200 Football League appearances under his belt. He should be leading. He should be looking at the likes of Tabana, the likes of Holacek, and saying to them, I was once you. I know what it needs to be to progress up through the leagues. Okay, I've progressed up through leagues and ended up back here, but I still want to end up in a higher division in the future. So I'm glad he's taking on that mantle, and it's good to see.
It's because we touched on Connor Thomas. He's obviously not going to get we could go through the whole team, but he's not going to get the praise or as much praise as the goal scorers and whatnot could say. But I thought he was phenomenal yesterday. Considering he hasn't played for 2 or 3 weeks, he literally covered every blade of grass. And he was the one for the press. Like, he was the one that set the press. He set the tempo. So he probably went under the radar. But I thought, again, as all of them were, Connor Thomas was very good yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mark, I think it was an indication of how well Crewe started that two things happened. The first was the home fans got on the back of the county players quite quickly. The second, their manager had to take a player off after 26 minutes, which is quite an unusual situation for a professional team.
And they did the goalkeeper go down injured bit to have a team talk after a few minutes as well, which is going to be my new pet hate in football. Because obviously if an outfield player does it now, you've got to come off for 30 seconds. So everyone's getting their keeper to do it instead. So I just think you should take the keeper off for 30 seconds. That'll soon stop that.
I honestly think...
Mark, do you want to answer the question?
I think once again, it comes down to the preparation and the sheer hard work that goes in from Ryan Dicker and Lee Bell. You know, we take time to go and watch opponents. I know that Belly was at Walsall on Tuesday night watching Morecambe, and so teams will do the same to us. And I think that the preparation and the plans that they put in often catch opposing managers out because we set up specifically for each opponent rather than being having a Harrogate style generic. This is how we're going to play regardless, because that's not the first time we've seen it. And I'm going to make the point, and I know you shouted at me yesterday, Stu, sort of, via message, but these aren't just your run-of-the-mill sides that we're going to...
Well, Mark, can we put into context of when I said, oh, Mark, there was 15 minutes of the game left and you'd basically decided we'd won the game. We've all watched Crewe Alexandra for long enough to know the game isn't over until it's over. You know, that's my defence. Sorry.
I completely agree. And I didn't enjoy the last 20 minutes. But the point I was trying to make is that, you know, with the greatest of respect, we aren't beating Sutton and Forest Green and Colchester. These are top, top teams. You know, we've been to Wrexham and should have won there. We've been to Mansfield and beat them. Barrow, you know, I don't want to reel them all off. But these are top, top teams. And yesterday... I go on and on this podcast about the psychology being important in football. Up until Notts County scored that scabby goal, that obviously that changed their mindset and belief, because the last 20 minutes they sort of dominated. Before that, we nullified Notts County. They didn't have a sniff. They looked a very, very ordinary side. I know they're not on the best of runs, but even so, that's Notts County on their own ground. And we completely outplayed them. You're right, we allowed them to have the ball. I think it was you said, Steve, it was always in front of us. They were stroking it round across the back four or whatever it was. No danger. At no point was I really that worried. I think Connor Thomas perhaps dived in on Scott Robertson a little bit and he managed to get that shot away first off. But aside from that, nothing. So I think it's a nod to the manager and his assistant as much as the players and the preparation that we put in and we set up. And it looks to me a little bit like we're trying to get teams beaten in the first sort of 10, 15 minutes.
Alex, I disagree with Mark slightly there. There was a spell from about 40 to 45 minutes where I thought Notts County were on top and were looking like they had a goal in them. But they didn't. You know, we got to half time at 2-0. And I think it's probably a good opportunity to talk about Harvey Davis. I think all of us on this call were ready for him to be dropped when he was dropped. But he's come back in after Tom Booth's injury, and you can't really fault anything he's done so far.
No, you can't. I mean, we'll get on to the third goal later. Could he have done better with that? But actually, he just looks a more confident keeper. He's got more command of his box. The times that you see him coming towards the 18 edge of his 18-yard box and sort of claiming balls that come through over the top, there just seems to be a bit more assertiveness from it. It's almost like he's thought, do you know what? I've been dropped before. I've got nothing to lose here. I may as well give it a go. It's like he's going down swinging. It's not the right term for it. But there just seems to be just a bit more assertiveness around him. And it rubs off on the defence. I think it helps. I mean, we look very solid. You look at the last sort of, since Turns has come in, we've conceded, what, two goals? I think one yesterday and one against Stockport. The Stockport goal was offside, as far as I was concerned, considering where I was stood. And then yesterday's, there's an argument for that being offside as well. So we haven't looked like conceding as well. So I think having Watt in front of him, we look so much more solid. It's probably benefiting him. But still, like you said, he's come in, he's done what's required of him. And I think he's in possession of the shirt, so I'd be loath to give it back to Booth.
I want to believe that the rest of the team have put their arms around him a little bit when he was dropped and said, look, you're one of us, we're all in this together. It's okay. If you drop a bollock, it doesn't matter, we're all in it together, because there is an air of confidence about him that wasn't there before. He just looks more assured in everything that he does. And again, it's probably down to psychology, a lot of it. But yeah, he's been, you know, that shot from Robertson that I alluded to before, I think early on in the season, there's every chance that sneaks underneath him and goes in.
Steve, just really quickly, Alex has mentioned being dropped for Tom Booth. Crew Alex bench yesterday. Two goalkeepers. I don't really remember that happening before. Definitely not for Crew, but you know, you normally only see that in World Cup squads and Champions League where they're allowed to name the whole squad on the bench.
Historic. Absolutely historic. But then there was a concern because he did go down the back end of the second half, didn't he, with what looked pretty, it was at the other end, but he looked pretty shaken with a head injury. So then it was he was going to be the one to come off the bench. But yeah, pretty mad that we had two goalkeepers on the bench. Probably slightly concerning that we have to put two goalkeepers on the bench to fill it, but hopefully with Zach coming back in a few weeks, that won't be the case. But yeah, historic.
Did we just I haven't checked. Did the under-18s have a fixture yesterday, which is why that we named two keepers on the bench rather than putting a kid on the bench?
I think because Booth is back working. Booth was at the game last Saturday, warming the keepers up, and I think it was just a case of if he's coming to Knox, let's just bang him on the bench. I think that would be my theory behind it.
If Harvey Davis had been unable to carry on, which one was coming on?
Westwood went out first. That's what I'll say.
Did he?
That's what
Keen,
I
know, isn't he? Keen. Look at me, boss. I'm ready. Right, Alex, we'll get into the second half. I'm not really someone who's particularly good at dissecting tactics or anything like that. I've said before, I go more on vibes and how I feel about a game. But it looked to me like yesterday, Crew were very happy to let Notts County's centre-backs and goalkeeper have the ball. And then when they tried to pass it into the lanes or in the channels, that's where Crew's press or where they came alive. And, you know, my friend messaged me who won't watch the game. He said, Crew have had 22% possession. Notts County had 78. It must have been a battering. And I said, no. We absolutely put on a masterclass. And that's how it felt. But it just goes to show how well set up we were yesterday.
Yeah, the tactical setup was spot on. They've obviously looked at how Notts County want to play. And it's almost like, right, they're going to want to keep the ball. Let them keep it. Just let them keep it in front of us. And when we need to engage, we'll engage. And then we can hit them on the break by getting them to overcommit with the possession they had. They never did anything with it. I mean, what you will say is if you look at the last 10 minutes where I wouldn't say it got dicey, but you were on edge a bit, that is the counter. It is tiring to make sure you're in your structure. You've got to concentrate throughout. You've got to make sure you can take on the tactical information. And it does tire the players. So I think that began to show when Notts County begun to get a foothold in it. But if you're getting a foothold in a game and you're 3-0 down, there's a terminology which involves a creak and a paddle. And that's what springs to mind right now. So it's brilliant. Yeah, have your foothold at 3-0. I'd rather have it at 3-0 with 5 minutes to go than 0-0 with 5 minutes gone. So yeah, I was at ease throughout, which is odd, because usually I'm quite a nervous watcher.
I'm certain that there's some statistics that are beneficial, you know, ground covered and stuff like that, and how much weight the players have lost during the game. But possession and XG and all that bull, you know, I won't...
Bollocks, he wants to say.
All right, yeah, that all that bollocks. Who's it for? It doesn't really mean anything, does it? You know, you're quite right, Stu. I'm not questioning for a second those stats being wrong. They were probably spot on, but when the centre-halves and full-backs are just rotating the ball across each other and occasionally going back to the keeper, then unless you're there watching, if you're basing a game purely on the percentage of stats, then you're an idiot.
I am on the eye man, not a data man. I can tell you who's had a good game based on what I see with my eye, not based on what a spreadsheet's telling me, how far they've covered, how many passes they've completed, how many forward progressions they've had, none of that. I can just tell you by looking, he's played well today. He's not played so well today. But football is going that way. A lot of other sports are all analytically based, and football seems to be taking the lead. But I don't necessarily, I think there's still very much a spot for the eye test, and yesterday was a prime example.
Like listening to football dinosaurs, this.
bring back the pass-pat rule.
Yeah. I mean, I liked Mark's use of the word probably spot on, as though there's some conspiracy. I think, you know, the we've had enough of experts thing comes back to mind when you said the word probably spot on, as though someone's saying, no, let's just change those crew ones to upset Mark. XG and possession do tell a story, but you can't just look at a game and say, Crew had 3xG and Notts County had 1, therefore Crew deserved to win. It's part of this tapestry. You watch the game and then the stats help you sort of understand the game you've watched, I think. So I think there is some, you know, watch the game with your eyes, see what you think. But it helps tell that story as well. So I think there is definitely a pace for it. I don't want to just say, yeah, you know, always a real footballing man. You know, one of those panellists that sit on a soccer Saturday. That's not what I think I'm about. Steve, I'm going to come back to you to get us back onto more steadier ground. I said last week he'd had a really good week. Osterfield, he's had another pretty good week this week.
Yeah, he's had a good week, and he played well again yesterday. Rio did really well for the goal, pinched it. Rio was super. We're going to go for the team, but Rio was brilliant today. That's a different subject, and it was a really good finish. It was a really good clean strike. We were all right behind it. Probably argue if it was our goalkeeper, we'd be picking the bones out of it, but I don't really care, to be fair. It was a sweet strike. Really good finish, and it's good to see him chipping in with the goals, and he loves a celebration in the crowd, doesn't he? So I'm all aboard for that. But yeah, really, really good goal, and it should have really killed the game at that point. Few Notts fans started to leave, but obviously they pinched the one back. But yeah, really good goal.
Just really quickly on his celebration, he was shushing. And I did see the best Notts County question or comment I saw yesterday was, who's he shushing? I don't know the answer to that. Who does he think he needs to shush? Because I don't think it would be any of the Notts County fans. They'd had enough at that point, and it certainly isn't us. Mark, when he signed, I think there was a bit more fanfare for Lewis Lee, but he's definitely surpassed him. And I would say, even though we've got Tabernaw on the bench and it was great to see him coming back on, I think Osterfield starts now until he doesn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. I was fortunate enough to be at Barrow, so I saw him make his debut. He came on as a sub, and you know, I had to say at the time that he came into a side that was obviously winning and playing well. And then the following week, I think it was Salford, wasn't it, when he struggled a bit. But in fairness, Crew struggled that day. But yeah, I like him. I think he's gaining confidence with every game. You know, I think the goal he got at Stockport, I would imagine, gave him the confidence to let fly yesterday and have that belief. And, you know, I think I'd probably be questioning the goalkeeper as well, Steve, if he was ours. But that's only from the benefit of seeing it back on the telly on the day. It looked like it zipped in. But, yeah, I mean, and he had a good game. He's a big lad. He's a physical lad. I'm very mindful not to get too attached to lone players. I've learned that lesson over the years.
It was a good hit. If you actually look, though, the keeper has gambled. He's expecting Osterfield to sort of whip it far corner. So just before he strikes it, he takes a pace to his left, which just means he's not been able to cover. He can't get back across to his near post when the strike is narrowed into that near corner. So I think it's a good finish. Yeah, some questions around the goalkeeping, but I think it was a bit of quality to actually spot that the keeper taking that step and he picked his spot.
Alex, I'm going to stick with you for this question. We've got 12 games left of the season. We know Luke Offord is going to be out. If Connor Thomas stays fit, I would argue he stays in that position he played yesterday. We've got Tabernacle. He came back on yesterday. He didn't really do a lot yesterday, but he's going to be vital, I would suggest, in the 12 games left. Who's your three in that midfield?
I think there's two different threes, and I'll explain. We've got Forest Green, Sutton and Grimsby, bottom three sides in division at home. It's more than likely that they're going to sort of look to shut up shop and hit us on the counter-attack. So I think for games like that, you can probably afford to drop one of Thomas and Osterfield and have both Tabernacle and Holacek in midfield. When you go to an MK Dons away, I'd want Thomas and Osterfield in midfield and then one of Tabernacle and Holacek. I think I would, once he's fit, get Tabernacle in the Holacek role, but I would play Holacek in a more advanced position instead of Tracy. So I'd have a front three of whether it's Neville or CBR, Tracy and, Holacek and Kirk would be my front three. So I think there's almost a rotating three in midfield. So when you've got those sides that we think are going to shut up shop, I think you have both Tabernacle and Holacek in the side. When you've got sides who are likely to be a bit more expansive and try and play football a bit like Notts County yesterday, get Thomas and Osterfield in there just to give that protection.
How good was Holacek, by the way, in the first half yesterday with the press and the energy? He's starting to look like the player that we've heard all about.
He was that Stockport game, you know, however many thousand fans there at Edgeley Park Tuesday night. Not the best weather conditions. That was a coming-of-age performance from Holacek. I know he was hooked on the hour because he took a bit of a knock, but he was fabulous that night. When they were pressing him, the way he takes the ball on the half turn, his first touch is always into space. That's a sign of a good player. He sort of receives it, understands where the man is, and his touch goes where the man is, and so he's able to then play a pass. He's then able to drive. The last three games that he's played, and against Harrogate, I think he got awarded man of the match, and he was man of the match from what I saw on the iFollow. He is beginning to... I've not been this excited about a prospect since Nick Powell 12 years ago. He's got that feels to it, everything he does. I know he's not had the output yet in terms of goals and assists, but it just feels like there's an explosion ready to happen.
Alex Arani said to me yesterday on the way out of the ground, I don't know if you remember this, give the ball to Holacek and everything will be okay. Alexander Arani, 24th of February, 2024.
I probably did say that. It does sound like one of my drunken ramblings. But, yeah, I like him. I like him a lot. I think there's a proper player there. And the good thing is, there's no release clause in his contract. And he's still got another 3 years left on it when it comes to the summer. So if he continues his form, he begins to add goals and assists to his game, you're hopeful there's going to be a seven-figure fee coming our way when the time does come.
Yeah, I mean, that all matches up with what Aaron said last week about him being the next crew £1 million player, the next player that goes on that wall. Steve, I know we've talked about, or you've talked about not going through every player, but there is one, and we've touched about him already slightly, but I'm going to ask you about Rio Adebisi. It seems to me every week, I said, he's come on leaps and bounds, and every week he seems to just impress and impress and impress. He's been phenomenal this season, and he was phenomenal on Saturday again, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I'll be first to hold my hands up. I wasn't sure on Rio Adebisi. Even probably into sort of autumn time, I thought he always looked like he could get beaten by a decent winger. I think the Colchester guy had him on toast when we played them, but he has come on leaps and bounds, and he's such an athlete as well. Like, the energy that he gives down that left-hand side is phenomenal. We probably talked about it before, but he probably would be up there for player of the season if it wasn't for Mickey. He was absolutely blowing at the end of the game yesterday, but the stuff that he offers on the left-hand side, his athleticism is something else. So big, yeah. And his deliveries as well, like the deliveries, not only his defending has got a lot better. The lad they brought on yesterday looked fairly tricky, but I don't think he ever got past him. But his deliveries into the box, something special.
I remember saying after he did an interview, I think, for you, Stu, because we sponsor him, and he thought that there was aspects of his game that were better than Pixie's, and I sort of scoffed at it and said, no, they're not. Just get your head down and get on with it. And I think now he's starting to emerge as a real player. For those who don't know, and obviously that's everybody, I posed a question in our Podtrack group a few weeks ago about would the current side beat the promotion side from 2020? And then Alex switched it up and said, can you make an 11 out of the two? And I think a testament of how far Rio's come is you'd probably have to stop and think about whether you'd have him or Pixie in the 11 if you were to pick the best side from the two sides.
I mean, I'm going to pat myself on the back here. Everyone last year was quite critical of Rio. I died on the Rio Adebisi Hill. One of your esteemed panellists who comes on, certain Trevor Griffiths, absolutely had it in for Rio. And we got into some quite heated discussion surrounding his merits as a footballer. I think, as Alan Partridge once said, needless to say, I had the last laugh. because he's been superb. But I was saying last year, there was, if you look at his game, I mean, I remember he scored against Rochdale at home and it was like, right, he looks good going forward. Earlier in the season, he wasn't giving us anything going forward. I remember the Swindon game away where he looked very solid defensively. So it was right, Rio, you can do both aspects of the game. Can you now put it together? And this season, he had put it together consistently. I mean, two assists yesterday. I mean, the second one was a 5-yard pass, but somehow that's going to count as an assist. But the first one was a tremendous cross. Still not as good as the cross against Derby, that absolute doozy, which I still have dreams about. But he's been phenomenal. And like Mark said, if you were picking Harry or, Pickering or Adebisi, that's some answer for someone there. Because I've got Chris, because I'm on the fence.
Just really quickly, Trevor, when you're listening, just expect your invite for next week's podcast to give you a right of reply to that comment from Alex there. There's another fullback as well. And I think the best testament I can give to both Rio and Billington is Jody Jones is by far and away seen as the best assister in League Two. I don't really think he had a sniff yesterday, and he played on both wings, one in one half and one in the other. And we've talked about this before. Lewis Billington is about 15 games into his professional career. And to have someone completely pocketed like that, it's only a positive for the future, isn't it, Mark?
I can't sort of speak highly enough of him at the moment. And as I've pointed out before, I watch home games from the very back of the main stand on the halfway line. But when I go to away games, I get to see certain players a little bit more closely. And he was one yesterday in the first half. And the sheer determination on his face when he's trying to stop crosses and win the ball. You can see he's in a personal duel with that player in that moment. It's like, you are not going to be better than me. And as I've said before, you know, nobody, I don't think, with the greatest respect, would have had him in the crew team this year if we were talking about it in August. It was questionable if he was ever going to even play. I think he was probably seen as a backup player. But my word, what a player he's becoming. And another potential defender and fullback coming off the Crew Alex production line.
The team, yeah, the going back to Billo, the biggest compliment you can give him, it looks like he's been in there for years, isn't it? Like no one walks into the ground or sees the team at 2 o'clock on a Saturday and thinks, shit, Billo's in the side. But we did a good job on Jody Jones yesterday. Say Shiloh put his work in going backwards when Jones had the ball, and obviously Connor Thomas come across. And in the end, I think Jones has lost it as he was just lobbing balls in the box at the end of the game because he knew that left side, right side, he wasn't getting past Rio or Billo. So that's a testament to pair of them.
Steve, I'm just going to come back to you there. You just said, you see Billington's in the team and you don't get, I'll clean it up, you don't get disappointed. I think Lee Bell's done such a good job with this squad that I don't really think there's anyone when they start. I'm like, oh, for God's sake. I'm quite confident in the squad as a whole at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about this before we obviously started recording. I think this is probably, in all the crew teams in my life, like the teams under Dario, they were just good players who, it wasn't about the opposition, it wasn't about formation. We just go and beat teams. We'll score more than you. Artal was a 4-3-3 loyalist. and under Davis we had Boy Genius, whereas this team is just so adaptable. It's probably the most adaptable and well-coached side that we've had. And that boils down to the players. You look at the starting 11, whoever that may be, and you don't ever think that there's a weak link in there. And again, what Mark said, that is a nod to Bally and Ryan Dicker. Like, we will set up to play against our team. We won't just turn up and think we'll score more than you. But there's a plan for everything that we do. And the players buy into that. You know, you can tell the performances and the results prove that. But you heard interviews after the game, and they get the information during the week, and they just go out there and execute on a Saturday. So, again, that's a nod down to the manager and Ryan Dicker.
I think to your point, Steve, I'd argue this is probably the most complete crew side I've seen in my life. What I mean by that is, like you said, the 2012 team, I mean, it had Westwood, Murphy, who went on and played at a high level. Powell obviously got the move to Man United. That's three phenomenal footballers in there. You look at the 2020 side that got in there, you had Wintle, NG, Pickering, all three of them plying their trade in the Championship. Now, Kirk went and got a move afterwards. That was a really good footballing team. But if you actually look at this side in terms of all aspects of the game, I think it's probably the most hardened and most savvy side that we've had. And I think if you look at the goals that we have stopped conceding, you know, we would never stopped concede. We carried on conceding them in either of those two teams previously. And if you look at the way we're scoring from set pieces and doing all the basics so well without having to rely on that individual brilliance, is a testament just to how this side is set up and how it plays.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the best team. I think
worth pointing out. I think you're absolutely right. And the measure of any player in any team, I think, is by the size of the hole that they leave when they're out. And we've suffered some big injuries, and we've managed to plug those gaps with players that are more than capable. And it's worth pointing out that we're doing this and getting these results without the likes of Zach Williams, Luke Offord, and Jack Powell, and Chris Long, of course. You know, they're big players, and I think there's an argument that all of those would be in Crewe's strongest 11, in inverted commas.
We also sold Conor O'Riordan and probably replacing him with someone that's actually better. I don't ever think we've sold an academy player before and replaced him with someone who is equally, if not better, player than what we sold. So
that's the exact point. Again, it's just a nod. Again, you know, people will be sick of it, but it's a nod to the manager and assistant manager and his team. And it's good being a Crewe fan at the minute. It really is.
Yeah, it's sort of an idea of an article I've had knocking around my brain for about 2-3 weeks now. But, you know, planning this, recording this, having a job that I get paid to do properly, and then writing articles, it all is a bit too much at the time. But it's just every problem that you seem to throw at Lee Bell, or, you know, the coaching staff as a whole, they seem to come up with a solution and it seems to work. And I do hope it continues because, you know, I don't want to talk about negative stuff, but Alex, I remember you and I sitting down with Graham McGarry the first time we spoke to him for the podcast and talking about Dave Artell, and you said the bubble will burst. And I think it's fair to say the Dave Artell bubble did burst. So, you know, I'm hoping this carries on for as long as possible. But at the moment, he just seems to get everything right, and long may it continue.
Well, the biggest sort of problem that Steve Davis and David Artell faced and couldn't deal with was when some of the better players were sold and moved on, and weren't, the ones coming through weren't perhaps ready. What I'm going to say it, people spit and don't like it, but the bottom of the cycle. I don't think either of them dealt with it very well. Well, they didn't. And they both produced god-awful. That side that got relegated to Vale Park was abysmal. And obviously the relegation season under David Artell was one of the worst in living memory. I can't see that happening to Lee Bell. He just seems too savvy in terms of players that he brings in. And also the way that he, I don't know, I keep saying this as well, he galvanises the group and brings them together and gets the best out of them. And that will ultimately, let's face it, that will be his test, won't it, when this side starts to break up. Although, having said that, I don't see this side, weirdly, breaking up as quickly because there are no superstars. As you said before, Stu, there's no one that you see on the team sheet and you think, oh, God. There's nobody that's missing either where you think, oh, my God, we're never going to win. We've got no chance. They're missing. I probably felt it a little bit yesterday with Luke Offord, but Connor Thomas was fine. So that will be the test, but I'm quite confident this time that Lee Bell's got enough to overcome it.
Really quickly, Mark, off topic. There will be another team relegated at Vale Park this season, if that makes you feel any better.
It makes me feel incredibly better. Thank you, yes.
One important thing, my media team, you've just clipped that ready for if they do stay up, and that'll be played the minute they do confirm their course, League One status.
Of course, of course.
Rent-free, I think is the saying.
Yeah.
To Mark's point, I think with the Artel team, COVID hurt us in the sense of the side stayed together a season longer and then we lost them all in one hit. You know, there'll be a lot of people who are critical of Artel towards the end of his era. I'll be one of them. Where I will give him a bit of rope was, if COVID hadn't have happened and we'd have gone up, you probably would have lost maybe a Kirk. Or let's say Pixie would have gone 6 months earlier. You'd have lost him for that season. You might have lost NG. And in the winter, you might have lost a Wintle. And in the following summer, you might have lost a Kirk. So you can stagger it. The fact that we pretty much lost all four of them overnight, Kirk on the eve of the season, was something that he was punch drunk from and we never recovered. But to this point, I think we can stagger the breakup of it, which makes it easier to manage. And the reason I don't think Belly will struggle from it, the recruitment in the past 18 months has been bob on. The last three windows, if you look, we got Finnegan in and Beadle in last January, who were really impressive for us. The summer just gone, obviously we got Powlin, who looked very good before he got injured. Who else have we signed?
Mickey
Dimitru, how could I forget that? Shiloh Tracy, who obviously replaced Adji and has been, he's obviously not got the output that Adji's got, but he softened the blow. And then if you just look at the window just gone, you've got Turns, Kirk and Osterfield in. So the recruitment has been bang on the money, and that is ultimately what killed Davis and Artel. Was when we lost the better players, we were unable. You're never going to bring in the players of the same quality. It's about finding players that can fit in the way you play. So the sum of the parts is it softens the blow. So that's why I'm hopeful that we don't see the sort of bubble being burst under Lee Bell. And it is going to look, it's not going to be as inflated as it currently is. It is going to deflate. You just hope, hopefully, it doesn't go pop altogether.
What a beautiful analogy, Alex. Love that. Let's get back to the game. We've still not quite got to 90 minutes at Meadow Lane. Steve, I did think Harvey Davis played well. There were some people I saw saying it was his best game for Crewe. It was an unfortunate goal to concede. I think realistically it was offside, but you want him to do better at the same time.
Yeah, when I was in the ground, I thought he chucked it in. I didn't see the chat. I watched it back this morning. I was just seeing the chat run in front of him. I was just more disappointed for the team, really, because I thought we deserved a clean sheet yesterday. It wasn't so much that it put us on the back foot for 10 minutes, but again, I don't think they really threatened. But yeah, I was more disappointed for the team that they didn't get the clean sheet. And going back to Harv, like he's done what he's been asked to do. He hasn't been diving around his goal as much, I don't think. He hasn't been making many saves, but then that plaudits to those in front of him that are stopping them shots coming in.
I think it's a good point. It's something that we didn't mention before when we were talking about the fact that he's come back in. I think he's probably looked more assured because he is, but I think there's also an argument to say he's probably looked more assured because he hasn't had as much to do, because teams like Harrogate, dare I say, are happy now at this stage of the season to look at Crewe and see where we are and come and take a point, which I think they very much did last Saturday. They came to Gresty Road, and if they got away with a 0-0, which they did, that's fine. They're happy with that. So I think he's probably got less to do, but I do think, you know, he has come back in a stronger player than he left. I'm going to move on from that, though. Alex, you three were all there yesterday. There was close to 1,500 Crewe fans. That's phenomenal.
Brilliant, isn't it? I think it helps. It's a direct train from Crewe, and obviously it stops at a few places on the way when it can pick people up. But the atmosphere was excellent, and it was good at Stockport on a Tuesday night. I know obviously that's closer to home. So long may it continue. I think everyone behaved. I know obviously there was a few unsavoury photos swirling around after the Stockport game, but everyone behaved, got behind the lads, and it was a terrific atmosphere. Hopefully they continue to get the support that their performances warrant.
It shows that the numbers can be there. I mean, it's a direct train to Notts, but it's still an hour and a half on a train. You know, it's an hour and a half in the car if you're from Crewe. There was no cheap tickets like there was last time at Notts, so the support is there. I think Bally touched on it yesterday in his after-match press conference. We probably need that at home as well, the noise. I think we'll probably talk about Morecambe in a bit, but I think we're now in the stage of the season, and certainly the home games that we've got left, other than when the Disney Shaggers arrive, playing teams around the bottom. And there's going to be an air of expectation, I think, at home games. And I think the crowd probably, whether this is a plea or not, but we're going to need to be patient at home, and the crowd are going to need to be patient and stick behind them. The away support's phenomenal. We'll always get behind them. There's always a load of noise, but I think back in CW2, we need to be patient and still bring that noise, because it's going to be...
It's important just to acknowledge that it's all relative. You know, if you're comparing Crewe's away support to Leeds, then it's not very good. But historically, I would suggest that we've maybe got a real hardcore away fan base of about 350. So when you're taking 1,500 to anywhere, whether it's Stockport or Notts County, the distance doesn't matter. Those people, it's a day, isn't it? When you go to an away game, it's a day, taking a day out of your life. You've got to travel there, pay for a ticket, pay for travel, watch the game, and then you don't get back like you get back from a home game. But people are willing to do it, and they're not only willing to do it, they're getting behind the team when they do. You know, I think most away ends, I've been in quite a few this time, that I've been and haven't stopped singing from minute one to minute 90. And it's brilliant. It's fantastic, you know. You go down for a piss at half time and everyone's dancing around the concourse and singing. And, it, you know, it's just great. It really is fun to be a Crewe fan again. And I look forward to my weekends again.
Well, that was my comment. I think Steve sort of went off in a different direction, one that I can fully get behind as well, you know, getting behind the team at home games. But look at our next two away games. It's Doncaster and MK. They've both got stadiums that are too big for the fan base that are currently turning up. So there is an opportunity to take a lot of fans to both of those games again, make some noise and get behind the boys, because it can be rubbish watching Crewe. You know, we've been doing this podcast in a season when it was probably the most rubbish I've ever had as a Crewe fan. But these are the times you want to be there. I'm 100% missing out on these games at the moment by not living in England. If you can afford it, if you've got the time off work and all of these things, get to the game and get behind the lads would be my rallying call. I'm going to finish, Alex, by sort of asking you all where a little state of the union almost. What do you think is going to be the end result? Steve and I'd say we both sort of consider ourselves quite zen, placid, neither two up, two down. I think Steve probably even more so than me. I've been telling him for months we're getting promoted. I think he's almost willing to accept that I might be right now. Alex, where do you feel?
Oh, my heart says that Wrexham are going to come to town in the end of April. We're going to ruin the documentary, and we're going to then go to Colchester, do what we need on the last day of the season, and sneak in automatically. I just worry that it's a hell of an ask for us. If you look at the three sides around us, MK Dons are coming as well. Just to be clear, there are four sides who have got significantly bigger budgets than us. At this level, there is a direct correlation between money spent in squad to league position. So I think if I was to think of it sort of logically, parking my Crewe hat, looking at it from the outside in, I'd say we're going to slip into the playoffs. But I've got this dream of ruining that Wrexham documentary and sneaking into the autos.
Steve, are you convinced?
After yesterday, I am starting to believe. Alexander once said a few weeks back, enjoy the ride. I think I'm on the ride. These last 2 months have been pretty, well, nothing short of sensational, have they, realistically? We've gone to Mansfield and won, gone to Barrow and won, gone to Stockport and won. We went to Notts County and won. And do you know what? Stockport and Notts County were comfortable. If you take the emotion out of it, I think they were fairly comfortable victories. So we can't be scared of anyone. These big wins, if you were, are now becoming a norm, dare I say it. So we've put ourselves in a very good position. We've got some tasty games, games at home that we should win. Probably eyes on the MK and that Welsh side coming to town, but we've got 2 months now. Let's give this a right good go. Everyone needs to get to the ground, bring your dinner, and let's have a good go. It's on.
Mark, where do you sit on all this?
I'm not sure. The first thing I
Jesus
did...
Christ, Mark.
I'm so sorry. The first thing I do, I can't. The first thing I still do when I get in the car is have a look how far clear of falling out of the playoffs we are, which is 12 points.
Per team of goal difference, Mark.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. Mark, I do exactly the same thing, and I looked at it, did the 12, and then did what Steve did and added one for the goal difference.
Yeah, so, you know, because to not be involved at all at the come April, May would be an absolute travesty. I think I'm just enjoying the rides, too. I'm enjoying going to these grounds and coming away and win. There's no better feeling than walking away from a ground, particularly like Meadow Lane. It's a big ground. You know, at this level, they're a big club, having shut them up. I don't know. I think we're getting into silly season before much longer as well, where the results start to be upside down. You know, Forest Green are going to come to Gresty Road and park the bus. Grimsby are probably going to do the same. I think Steve makes a really good point. We're going to have to be patient at home. It could almost be more difficult playing games at home. I think it'll be playoffs.
I mean, the playoffs isn't the end of the world, is it? Let's be honest, considering where we were.
How far we've come, that the playoffs would be almost disappointing, which is just ludicrous from where we were a year ago.
Just for the record, the end of the season will read top Mansfield, second Crewe Alexandra, third MK, and then Stockport and Wrexham will neither of them go up in the playoffs. One of them will lose in the final. I couldn't give a monkey's which one it is. That's how the season's going to end, guys. And with that, we're going to end the Notts County talk. Next, we'll have a little look at the Morecambe game coming up. But first, we will hear from the women's team who are back in league action against Curzon Ashton on Sunday.
Matt, a 1-1 draw against Curzon. What are your thoughts on the game?
We're pleased. We're pleased with the players. You know, we feel like we've done really well. We've moved the ball well and created some good opportunities to score. Felt like we've been on top for all the first half. Obviously, they came back a bit strong in the second half and asked a couple of questions. We needed hands to make a good save, but they've not really tested us too much. It was a great finish by them, and half of me is thinking, you know, it'd be harsh to deny them a point because I thought that they were more than competitive, they were decent. But it's just disappointing when you drop the point so close to the end. I think 3 minutes from the end, we've done everything apart from just see those final 3 minutes out. So the girls are frustrated, naturally. We're obviously disappointed because we haven't taken 3 points, but I have to be proud of the performance.
A clean sheet would have been nice because I think the defensive performance today was very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, defence has been brilliant all season. It's our best defensive performance for as long as I've been at the club. You know, our goals conceded is right down. I think it's 20 plus. It's more than 20 goals conceded, than last season. So defensively, we've been superb. And we were today. You know, Shanice Raggers are pretty much ever-present at centre-back. And then whoever filters in at full-back, whether it be Caitlin, Ellie, Kirsty, even Amelia at times, M. Heath in there. We've been decent, so happy with that. We just need to be, a little bit more prolific in front of goal.
A great performance from Hannah Holloway in goal as well.
Yeah, don't feel. I mean, we're harsh on Hannah because she's the best keeper in the league by a country mile, and probably the league above that. So what we see today is she's made a good save, very good save. And if you don't have Hannah in goals, if you're not used to seeing her, you think that's a worldy of a save. But that's a standard fan. Dealing with the crosses again, I'm being harsh on her. At the end of the day, she's that good. We set our standards high. So yeah, she's done well, but I wouldn't say she's like kept us in the game or anything silly like that.
So you mentioned about conceding so late. Do you think that's a fitness issue? Do you think that's a fatigue issue? Or was it just, you know, just luck of the draw?
I think, no. Partly, I think obviously it's a good finish, but I don't think it was a fatigue issue. I thought we were looking good. Or a fitness issue, possibly slight game management issue. You know, we're learning as we move. I feel like we're a little bit too nice. We're still trying to attack. 1-0 left, 5 minutes to go. 1-0, sorry, 5 minutes left. And I feel like we're being a little bit naive in possession about the choice you make. And then the gap's opened up for the counter, and they've done the counter. I just think that with 5 minutes to go, you should never be in a position where you're being counter-attacked if you're up in the game. So, but that's all learning for us. That's for us to go away and analyse. And our job as coaches is just to educate the players. Remember, we've got a lot of young players in the team. That in youth football, you're encouraged to attack at all times, development and time on the ball. And it gets a little bit more cutthroat in open age football. So, like I say, our job is to educate. That's a learning curve. Isn't the first time it's happened. It won't be the last.
There was some good football played today, though, wasn't there?
Yeah, definitely. Felt like that midfield three of Deville, Scheza and Gibbo's working really well. The rotations in the triangle, whether we have the 2 points of the triangle as the sixes, or whether the 2 points end up as the tens, it moves quite freely. Lots of flexibility in the front three, to the point where like our top scorers on the bench today, through no fault of our own, we're just trying to create opportunities and give people chances. Everyone offers us something different. Fallon offers us that strength and that aerial ability and trying to make it stick, whereas M's more playing between the lines. It's a great problem to have. We're missing Amelia today as well. She went ill overnight, so that changed plans slightly. But yeah, the football, we just said that to the girls in there, as disappointing as it is, to quote them, Scheza said, it feels like a loss. And I think that's a sign of how far we've come, that we're playing decent teams, top teams, and it feels a little bit like a loss. And I think sometimes going in there and battering them isn't going to help things whatsoever. We have to say, did we play really well today? Yes. Did we deserve more? Yes. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, but credit to Curzon.
Well done to them, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Alex, I'm going to start with you. We still haven't played Morecambe. We've got 12 games left. It'd be nice to actually, get this one played and one of them out of the way.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't manage to beat Grimsby yesterday, which seems like everyone else in the league has been doing. So I suppose that's a positive sign. Let's get it out of the way. Let's just continue this good form and hopefully we can put another 3 points on the board.
Steve, I'll come to you. Morecambe are in this weird group of teams that sort of go from 7th to 16th, where they've all realistically, not even an outside shot, they've all realistically got a place of getting into the playoffs come the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it probably benefits us in the respect there's that many teams that are congested outside the playoffs. Morecambe obviously being one of them. They're a funny team. Didn't they go to MK and win the other week, I think, in the last minute? It's not going to be an easy game. But then, like I say, everyone's beating Grimsby at the moment and they couldn't turn them over yesterday. So it will be interesting to see how they come and set up. I probably imagine, like Mark saying, they're going to come and try and nick a point or it is on the break. So, yeah, time for patience at home, I think.
Yeah, Mark, I was just going to ask the same question. Is this the first example of us now with that being patient, try and break them down, take a 1-0 win all day?
I think so. One of the downsides, if there even is such a thing on the back of these results we've had, particularly since the new year, is that people are starting to take notice and talk about Crewe and see Crewe as a real, not only automatic promotion contender, but, people are also saying they're a title contender, which I think is a fair point as we stand at the minute. So no one's going to come and make it easy. The flip side to that, of course, is I completely trust Lee Bell and Ryan Dicker. I think they'll come up with a plan. An early goal would be absolutely delightful because then it stops teams, doesn't it, parking the bus. But, if we win 1-0 and it's not the best game, I don't care. It's just a matter of getting the points, I think.
What will the score be, Mark?
I'm going to just sit on a steady, straightforward 2-0 home win.
Steve?
I predict that their goalkeeper will go down in the 7th minute with a little niggle. But I'm going to go with Mark 2-0.
Alex?
1-0 home win. We get the job done, just.
Lovely stuff. Okay, I spoke to James from the Morecambe FC feed to see what to expect on Saturday. Hi, James. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me back.
Not a problem. So it wasn't that long ago when we spoke last time. I think what I'll ask you to do to start with is just sort of fill in the gaps since that postponed game to where you are now. What's going on with Morecambe at the moment?
Well, we went on a nice run, actually. We had
A good away win. MK Dons, which wasn't expected. We always get battered there. Last minute winner from a player, Charlie Brown, who's always been a substitute for us. But as soon as Jed Brannan came in, he started saying that, you know, going to give these extra players a bit of a different chance. And he took his chance and he played a lot of minutes between that MK Dons game, and eventually he got himself into the starting 11. We then came into a Colchester at home game, but we thought, given where Colchester are, we could have probably won that. But that was sort of the epitome of our home form at that point under Jed Brannan. Derek Adams, that is, was very sort of fixated of getting the home form sorted, making yourself a fortress at home. Jed Brannan seems to, the way we play now, it seems to be a bit with a bit more possession, which maybe doesn't necessarily suit us, because at home we are now. Instead of just defending all men behind the ball and ready to counter-attack, it seems at home we're sort of almost now forced to play with a bit more possession, which wasn't really Derek's style. But away from home, I think naturally, given who we are and who we're playing against in the league most weeks, with bigger budgets and maybe aspirations to get out of this league as soon as possible, you do find yourself counter-attacking. And I feel like the squad is still suited to counter-attacking football. So I guess the crumb of comfort for the game at the weekend is we beat MK Dons away, we beat Crawley away, we beat Tranmere away. We got a great point at Wimbledon away, who are obviously a team in and around the Crewe sort of area. Dropped off a bit recently, but we can do it away from home. Home form has stuttered a bit. And I guess to round off the away form, we did get pretty much played off the park by Walsall, a very physical Walsall side, lost 3-0. I don't think we can have too many arguments about that. But yeah, I think that probably fills in the gaps. It's just sort of more of the same. It's back into a decent position and we hope to sort of continue it.
James, it sounds to me like I should be more worried about this game than the away game. You know, the much postponed away game that's going to happen in the last weeks of the season, then listening to that. This should be, from your perspective, a good game where you've got a chance of going away with the 3 points then.
Yeah, it's weird. I think if we can just avoid going 2-0 down in the first half, we've always got a chance, because we seem to have, of late especially, we just can't start games well at all. Every game we concede or we really struggle in the first half. Even at home to Sutton, we had a pretty poor first half the other week. At home to Grimsby, as we're speaking yesterday, Saturday, the first half was just not at it at all. And, you know, conceding within 2 minutes to Grimsby and then not really having much of a kick for the rest of the first half just isn't really good enough. But that's what we sort of did against MK Dons. We only conceded one in the first half and we could come back from it. But yeah, I'm not particularly hopeful. I think at home we probably still have an edge, because I know Crewe are in very good form. And I think we still have sort of the hope to have home advantage. But yeah, if we can somehow get to the end of the first half at 0-0, I think the players will fancy themselves.
Okay, let's have a look at the season as a whole then. Now, Morecambe, after the games on Saturday, are in 10th, 48 points. They're three behind Gillingham. But, I mean, those playoff places that are up for grabs are a little bit bonkers at the minute. Because if you go all the way down to Newport in 16th, they're on 46 points, so just 2 points behind you. So you could genuinely make a claim for any of those teams from Gillingham down to Newport to end up in the seventh place, maybe even sixth place if Barrow continue with their bit of bad form. How confident are you that it's going to be Morecambe in those playoff places at the end of the season?
That's absolutely crazy, isn't it? Because even then you take into account, like, we've got a game in hand over Gillingham, but with all the other postponed games, almost everyone has a game in hand over Gillingham, so it's hard to really use that as a positive. I mean, I think it just comes down to execution now. Everyone's got their squads locked in. We signed Jordy Hiwula, a striker, as a free agent, but I feel like the free agent market, as we sort of found out when he missed a gilt-edged chance yesterday, it's probably a bit barren at this point in the year. So everyone's got the squads locked in. Realistically, everyone's got the managers locked in. If you're going to change your manager, I don't think you've got a chance, really, at this point in the season. It's really tough. I can't see it personally. I'd love to be optimistic and say we're going to finish seventh. But as you say, you've got 10 teams fighting for one position. and you've got to be basically, it's like a mini league now. You've got to be champions of those positions. And I mean, you only need to see Bradford. They got the game postponed against Barrow yesterday in crazy circumstances, really. And they're now down to 15th. And on Friday, they were saying, I think we can get playoffs. So in a normal season, 15th, you'd be out of it completely. I think we just need to try and keep away from injuries because we're slowly getting them again. We've had Brandon Barker, who was a January signing out for the season. Donald Love, who's the captain, has been out for 5 months now and he never seems to be really coming back. Our best attacking midfielder's out for probably another month. So if we can get them back and in the meantime just keep plodding along and getting points, then we might have a chance. But any more injuries, and I think it's probably curtains and just hoping for a top half.
All right, James, last question then. I've sort of talked to you before about what you're expecting from the game, but can I get a score prediction for the game on Saturday, please?
Tough one. Do I go with head or heart? I think I'm going to be there, so I'd like a few points. I can't see us not conceding, so I'll go for a 2-1 win. I'll be positive.
Lovely. James, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Right, a couple of things to finish off then. Firstly, a last man standing update. We are back with our third time round. Tim messaged and said that there's been a few late stragglers and the prize money is £690. Tim said there's 101 people entered. He did helpfully add that both him and myself are out, but our wives are through to round two. So thank you for that, Tim. The other thing as well, slightly sadder news. We've talked about him already. Luke Hofford, Mark, it sounds like he is out for the season now. It is a big blow, but it's a big blow for us, but it's also a big blow for him as well.
Yeah, I reiterate what I said before. The measure of any player is the size of the hole that they leave, and he's left a chasm, really, hasn't he? To be honest, I said to Tim the other day, and I meant it in complete seriousness, that it was so close between him and Mickey for player of the season that I might even abstain from voting because I can't choose between them. And it wasn't supposed to end this like this, was it? It was supposed to be him captaining us to a promotion. Long term, whether that'll see him stick around Gresty Road a bit longer, it might do, you know, because I don't know how long the healing process is going to be, but you'd have to think that off the back of a serious injury like that, he would be seen as a fitness gamble for any club that didn't know him as well as us. So maybe it means we see him for perhaps another 12 months even. I'm sure the club will look after him, and I hope he's in and around the dressing room and he's coming across with the players at the end of games to clap the fans as well, because he's as much a part of this as anybody. And I want him to stay involved in it because he deserves it.
Steve, the other piece of news this week, Conor Evans has left the club and he's gone to go over to the League of Ireland to join Waterford. I think that's probably, in my opinion, the right decision for the club and the player. It didn't really look like he had a career in the first team here.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shame, really, because that youth team of him was obviously Conor O'Riordan and Zach. He was the vocal point of that. And I think during the dark days of when the cycle bottomed out, a lot of people were hanging their hats on him, but it just never seemed to materialise. He never kicked on his loan spells. I think he made one appearance, play against Carlisle last year, I think, at home in between Christmas and New Year, and with great respect, he looked miles off it, and obviously he just has got in ahead of him. So probably right for all around, you know, another one off the wage bill, and hopefully he can kickstart his career elsewhere, but good luck to him. It's just a shame it didn't work out.
I did have a little look as well. They are only two games into their season, but Waterford are top of the league. So, you know, he could be on his way to a league-winning title, although there's a long way to go. Some more sad news this weekend that's just broke is Stan Bowles. Obviously, no one on this podcast was old enough to watch him play. But, you know, I think we do need to sort of put it out there, and, you know, very sad news. The quote that's always said about Stan Bowles is the crew manager Ernie Tagg saying, if he could pass a betting shop like he could pass a football, he'd be a rich man. So, you know, I didn't watch him, but I know producer Dave's dad did and said he was quite a good player. So if producer Dave's dad is as good at football as Dave is, then he must be right. Alex, some lighter news to finish on. We've mentioned him, the man, the myth, the legend, Mickey. He's staying. Good news?
Yeah, brilliant news. He's obviously been phenomenal all season. Goals aside, his defensive work has been superb. Big shout out to him, absolutely clattering David McGoldrick yesterday in the first half. Worryingly, I did think he did an injury in the process, but being a warrior he is, obviously he just shrugged it off. And he thoroughly deserves his new contract. So I think it's another year on it with the option of another year. If he continues the way he's playing, it would be great for him to retire at our football club because he's the wrong side of 30. Don't know how many years are left in him yet, but he doesn't look like slowing down anytime soon.
I wouldn't bet it against him being a Crewe Alexandra manager within the next 10 years. If he goes down to coaching badges.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think that's part of his decision why he came here in the first place and part of the reason why he's staying here. I think, you know, the reputation of the club developing coaches as well as players. Yeah, I would firmly expect to see him hang his boots up and then get his coaching boots out of his bag and start coaching the next generation of Crewe players.
There is something else.
What's that?
Many congratulations on your 150 and not out, Mr. Price.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for starting it. Thank you for carrying it on. Thank you to Dave for being with you and turning it into what it is. It's absolutely incredible to both be a part of and to listen to. I know it's a big part of lots of Crewe fans' week because they tell me, at particularly away games. So massive nod to you, Stu. Thank you and well done.
Oh, very sloppy that, Mark. In that queue. But just to come in on that, Stuart, what, June 2020, I think, was the inaugural pod?
June 2020 was the first time we sat down and didn't have a clue what we were doing.
Yeah, and if you look if you go back to June 2020, what were you, a teacher doing a podcast? I think it's safe to say you're a podcast host who now teaches on the side. So I suppose that's the biggest compliment I can play to you. Long may it continue.
Thank you very much. Yeah, in case you didn't catch, it's not really worth celebrating for anyone other than myself. It's my 150th episode. I think it's the 178th episode we've done, which is fantastic. And I think the biggest thing for that is I know I can step away and let Steve and everyone else jump in when they need to now. But yeah, lovely to get to 150. Don't take compliments very well. So I'm going to end the podcast there and say, Mark, Alex and Steve, thank you for coming on today.
Pleasure.
Cheers, James.
Cheers.
Thank you, as ever, for listening. We will be back after the Morecambe game next week. Until then, goodbye. Bomb, 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 bomb